Democrats have a chance to win back the House of Representatives on Election Day. In Illinois' 14th congressional district is one of the seats that could flip. Here's Republican Randy Holkgren and his Democratic challenger, Lauren Underwood, speaking to the Chicago Sun-Times.
Our top priority is to continue the good work that we've already started. We've had some incredible results over these last months. Lowest employment in many, many years. Great record number of jobs being created.
I spent my career working to expand health care coverage in communities across our country. First by working to implement the Affordable Care Act at the federal level, and then joined the Obama administration where I worked on public health emergencies and disasters.
And if you think that only science, math, and history are the key to success in high school, think again. A new study links art and PE to graduation rates. Plus, a new program from the city of Champaign and the nonprofit See You at Home is helping put people struggling with homelessness to work. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. I hope everyone enjoyed their weekend. Coming up later in the hour, we're going to be hearing about how art classes and PE can affect high school graduation rates and a new program from the city of Champaign that's employing members of the homeless population. But first, if you're a regular listener to this program, you've been hearing about many of the different congressional campaigns across the state, from the Chicago suburbs to southern Illinois. Last Thursday, we hosted a debate for the 13th congressional district, which covers large parts of central Illinois, and we've got a special podcast of that audio if you're interested. A reminder that Election Day is November 6th. The online registration period has ended, but you can register to vote in person anytime, including on Election Day. But at this point, especially if you're registering for the first time in person, you should also be prepared to vote when you register. Our friends at the Illinois Newsroom have put together a handy guide for anyone in the state. All you have to do is enter your address and you'll get all of your ballot information. It's at ilvotes2018.org. That's ilvotes2018.org. This morning, we're going to run down three more congressional districts from northern and northwestern Illinois and Chicago's western suburbs. First up, Illinois' 14th district, which is currently represented by Congressman Randy Holkgren. It's a seven-county district that includes DuPage, Kane, and McHenry counties. Jim Fuller is a senior writer with the Daily Herald, and he's at the newsroom in Arlington Heights. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the 21st.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Jim, I wonder if you can describe, I've just run through the geographic parameters of the 14th congressional district. What does it look like demographically? What kind of people live in the 14th district?
It's a large variety of folks, actually. The district sort of stretches all the way up to the Lake County border or the border with Wisconsin, and then kind of comes back down and comes into a sliver of DuPage County. And within that, you have a wide variety of folks in there, everywhere from some more affluent suburban residents to some relatively large swaths of rural kind of farming communities. And then, a lot of middle-class folks up in the Lake County area. And, within all that, a large variety of political views as well.
And what about with those political views? The district went for President Trump in 2016, but it was pretty close, right?
Yeah, Trump only won the district by 4 points. So, that was relatively surprising for what has long been considered a pretty safe Republican district. So that's sort of what's fueling some of the interest in the race this time around, this idea that a Democrat might actually have a chance this time.
And so let's ask about Representative Holkgren. He has been in office since 2011. I wonder how you would characterize where he fits within the spectrum of the Republican Party, especially in relationship to President Trump.
Yeah, well, he definitely doesn't shy away from conservative mantle. He's somebody who has kind of conservative roots based in kind of this Milton Township, Wheaton area. You kind of think of Wheaton as a pretty conservative suburbs, home of Wheaton College, where the Reverend Billy Graham went, and that sort of thing. And Randy Holkgren's political trajectory. Folks may be a little bit less familiar with him than, say, someone like Peter Roskam. But Randy Holkgren and Peter Roskam, their sort of political trajectories are very similar. Their political views are very similar. When Randy Holkgren kind of first started his rise through politics, he took Peter Roskam's seat in the Illinois House of Representatives, and then when Roskam moved on to Congress, Holkgren took over Roskam's old seat in Illinois. Illinois Senate, and now they're both members of Congress. And so, you know, their political views are very similar. Roskam has been, you know, pretty vocally supportive of President Trump. I would say Holmgren has also been, you know, pretty vocally supportive of President Trump. But, you know, in terms of, especially in terms of his votes, although he has been outspoken in terms of, you know, what he kind of, you know, characterizes as, you know, kind of, you know, unseemly, you know, sort of dialogue that the president, you know, has been engaged in. He has kind of spoken out against that. But in terms of the president's policies, particularly things like the tax cut, he's been very on board with those measures.
And his opponent, his Democratic challenger, is Lauren Underwood. She won nearly 60% of the vote in a six-way primary. Can you remind us what's her background and what are the big issues she's campaigning on?
So Lauren Underwood, you know, she has a background as a nurse. She's, you know, grew up and lives in Naperville. She also did work as an advisor in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services under President Barack Obama, you know, working on some healthcare issues there. You know, she is perhaps not surprisingly with that background, her main campaign issue has been healthcare. She definitely takes the standpoint that healthcare is a right. She does kind of stop a little bit short of, you know, fully endorsing, you know, this blanket idea of
universal healthcare
mm-hmm. because there's a lot of different versions of what people mean when they say that when they say that term. But you know, she has been she's really hammered Holmgren on this idea that you know, Randy Holmgren has voted many times to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. You know, but from her perspective, you know, what Randy Holmgren is about is kind of taking away the protections for folks with pre-existing conditions, and that's kind of a personal issue for her because she does have a pre-existing heart condition that she does have under control. But that's really what, you know, when she talks about her story of being inspired to run, that's what she always comes back to, you know, kind of hearing Randy Holmgren say that, you know, I will protect your pre-existing conditions coverage, and then, you know, voting for what she saw was a version of healthcare reform that did not protect those with pre-existing conditions. You know, Randy Holmgren to this day, you know, denies that the version of a replacement healthcare replacement policy he supports would take away those protections, but it has been a battleground topic in the race.
And it's been an important issue for everyone. One last fun fact, Ben and Jerry's named ice cream flavor after Lauren Underwood. Is that right?
Yeah, that's just kind of a that's kind of a fun little nuance in this race. You know, you think of, you know, Ben and Jerry's, you know, they you know, a little bit of a, you know, progressive type company kind of in the nature, and yeah, they did you know, kind of back in you know, early October, they revealed this flavor, you know, kind of honoring it's, you know, it's kind of a campaign gimmick, no doubt
sure.
about it. But they did you know, sort of, you know, tacitly endorse Underwood by coming out with that flavor for.
Yeah,
her.
I think if you're coming out with an ice cream flavor for a candidate, I'm going to consider that an endorsement of that candidate. That's the 14th congressional district, as we said. The Democrat Lauren Underwood of Ben and Jerry's fame, running against Randy Holmgren, as you've been talking about, Jim. Obviously, healthcare, a very serious, important issue. We've heard that a lot. I want to thank Jim Fuller of the Daily Herald speaking to us about the 14th district. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
As you're just tuning into the 21st, we're giving you a rundown of some congressional districts in Illinois ahead of Election Day. Today, we're all along the Wisconsin border. If you're not sure who your House representative is, you can look it up online. I just tweeted out a way to do that, by the way. But follow our Twitter handle, 21STShow, and you can see that. Let's move to the 16th district. That includes parts of the city of Rockford, large portions of north central Illinois, and then actually goes east all the way to just south of Kankakee. Sue Stevens is a reporter with WNIJ, where she covers the 16th and is there from our partner station. Hi, Sue. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hello, Nyla. Nice to be here.
So this, yeah, the 16th district. I'm talking about the Wisconsin border, parts of Rockford. Then we're going all around Starved Rock State Park and then all the way east to the Indiana border. What does this demographically look like in terms of how urban it is, what the median income looks like?
Well, I have to say, actually, living in the 16th district, I've felt like it is a big mix of urban and rural. A lot more rural than the statistics show, though. Statistically, it's 71% urban. I think that includes a lot of medium-sized towns, though, in there. DeKalb's in there, too, so Northern Illinois University's there, too. It's a very white population as well, statistically, 91%. And it's been 25 years since there was a Democrat who represented the 16th district as well. This has been gerrymandered a bit. It used to include much more of Rockford. This is the district where former presidential candidate John B. Anderson and former Secretary of Labor Lynn Martin had served and for many years, and Don Manzullo for many, many years as a Republican, and now Adam Kinzinger. So it's quite a sprawling district. You could just ask the candidates, too, when they're out
right.
there trying to get to all those places.
And as we're hearing how oftentimes as we're thinking about Republican candidates, the big question is where do they fall on the Republican spectrum? What is their relationship like with President Trump? How would you characterize Congressman Kinzinger on that scale?
It's been interesting. Early on, he was an opponent of President Trump and kind of went against a lot of the things he said.
Especially when it comes to military policy, right, Sue?
Exactly.
A former veteran himself?
Yes, an Iraq War vet. And so early he was very outspoken as an opponent, but now he's moved more toward Trump and says that he supports his reelection bid 100%. And he really got behind the tax cuts, the federal tax cuts. So that he saw that as an important thing. But yeah, he has. It's interesting, though, in that a lot of his people he represents don't see him that way. He's not far right enough for some. There's kind of a movement to oppose him because they feel like he is too liberal to represent.
Or too moderate. I guess
too
liberal
moderate.
Now, which really means moderate. It's really the way we should describe it now, right? And so I wanted to ask you about his challenger, Democrat Sarah Dady, an immigration attorney from Rockford. I should say, as a full disclosure, she was on the 21st several times in her office as immigration attorney before she decided to run for office. So immigration is naturally one of her big issues. And I wanted to be a clip from a debate that was held on WCMY in Ottawa. Just a little snippet of both of the candidates speaking about immigration. Let's have a listen.
Let's take the folks that haven't broken the law beyond breaking the law coming here, and let's put them on a pathway to legal status. Let's put them for citizenship ultimately at the very back of the line, but you have to put your hand on your heart, pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and learn English. And ultimately, I want to see us as a sovereign nation go to immigration that is generous, but also based on skills as well.
Candidate Dady.
You know, the Republican Party used to understand the importance of immigration to our economy, and they used to lead on it. The best president we had on immigration was President Reagan, and he signed an amnesty for over 2 million agricultural workers in this country. The second part of what he wanted and what Congress has failed to do repeatedly is pass a real worker visa program.
That's a debate that was held on WCMY in Ottawa. The first voice you heard was Congressman Adam Kinzinger. The other voice, his challenger, Sarah Dady. I wonder what that says about politics in the 16th district, because I think it's pretty striking. Again, Congressman Kinzinger's position used to be the mainstream of the Republican Party. What he was saying, as his opponent, Sarah Dady, was pointing out, referencing Ronald Reagan, very different from, say, President Trump's.
Absolutely. Kinzinger is a supporter of the immigration compromise. He was really pushing for that. He says he wants reform. So, and interestingly, too, Sarah Dady, as an immigration lawyer, she's opposes the abolish ICE movement. She says it's more the problem is immigration law. There needs to be much more reform than, you know, it's not that simple. So, yes, I think that is representative of this district.
What other issues is Sarah Dady campaigning on?
Well, definitely immigration reforms, but also expanding Medicare gradually and eventually making a single payer system for healthcare. Healthcare is really a big issue for her. Those are the two biggest ones, really.
And as we've been hearing so much about Democratic enthusiasm across the country this election, what does that look like in the 16th district compared to other places?
It's interesting that the soundbite that you played from the debate that was on WCMY is the only debate that's happened in this campaign. You know, people have tried to get these two to onto the same stage. Kinzinger is keeping kind of below the radar. He's doing his congressional appearances and doing things that he normally would as a congressman, but is not doing campaign appearances or debates. So I think by keeping quiet, it's been a relatively quiet campaign. So Sarah Dady has been speaking out a lot and asking for debate, but it just hasn't happened. So it really seems like it has been sort of a quiet debate here.
Right. We'll see what happens with that race. That's Sue Stevens with WNIJ talking to us about Illinois' 16th congressional district. Thanks, Sue.
You're welcome.
We just before the break, I want to quickly start with our conversation about the 17th district. Herb Trix is with us from WVIK in Rock Island. Hey, Herb, welcome to the 21st.
Good morning.
So as we're going west across the Wisconsin border here, I wonder if we've just got about a minute to break, Herb, if you could just tell us very quickly about what this district looks like demographically.
Well, it includes sort of the northwest corner of the state. You start with part of Rockford and go directly to the Mississippi River. Then a couple of counties wide along the Mississippi down through the Quad Cities, Galesburg, Monmouth, and then it skips over and includes parts of Peoria and then Canton and Havana.
Wow, it's a big district. Okay, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up this conversation. We'll finish up our congressional conversations by learning a little bit more about this district, which is currently represented by Sherry Bustos. Stay tuned to the 21st. We'll continue this conversation with Herb Trix just after this break.
Support for the 21st comes from University of Illinois Press, publishers of New Media Futures, The Rise of Women in the Digital Arts. A symposium featuring these trailblazing women will take place on Friday, October 26th at NCSA, the University of Illinois Press, celebrating 100 years.
Tuning into the 21st, I'm Nyla Boudou. On Monday on the 21st, we like to talk Illinois politics. As we are getting closer to the election, we're looking at some congressional districts. Just a reminder, Election Day is November 6th. The period for online registration has ended, but you can register to vote in person anytime, including up to and on Election Day. But a reminder, if you're registering for the first time in person, you should be prepared to vote when you register. And if you don't know what your ballot looks like, you can head to ilvotes2018.org. That's ilvotes2018.org. Our friends at the Illinois Newsroom have put together a great guide. All you have to do is enter your address. It'll bring up your ballot, your representative, all of the issues that you will be voting on. Right now, as we're going across westward, we're in the north part of Illinois today, and we're going all along the Wisconsin border, and we're as far west as you could get here with the Quad Cities. And Herb Trix is with us at WVIK in Rock Island. And Herb, this is the only Illinois district outside of Chicago that's currently represented by a Democrat. That's Representative Sherry Bustos. Where does she fit in when we look at the Democratic Party as a whole?
Well, I think you could safely describe Sherry as very much a moderate. When she's out in the district, she almost never, or never that I know of, mentions what you might call hot button issues, guns, abortion, things like that. And she focuses pretty much exclusively on the economy and health care. And sort of those basic issues, you know, going back to the Clintons when they said it's the economy, stupid, and she pretty much follows that line. I would call her very much a moderate in the party.
And someone who spends a lot of time in the district, particularly, I know she has her Sherry on Shift, where she does different manufacturing stints and works working alongside constituents trying to learn more about their jobs. I wonder how much of that is also how much of her focusing on the economy, Herb. This is a district where probably a lot of voters voted for Trump and for her, correct?
That's right. I mean, Trump won the district a year and a half ago by maybe just a point, 47-46, but Sherry had a 20-point margin over her Republican opponent. In 2008, 2012, Obama had very strong majorities in the district, and yet one of those, a Republican sort of identified with the Tea Party was elected to Congress, and that's the person that Sherry eventually beat in 2012.
And she's running against her Republican opponent is a man named Bill Faywell. And I should point out he's actually does not have the support of Republican Party leaderships because of the conspiracy theories that he posts on social media.
Yeah, basically, he's a real estate broker, a realtor up in Galena, Illinois. And basically, he's been disowned by the local party in Rock Island County and the state Republican Party. They're unhappy enough with the things that he's posted on his website, unhappy enough to publicly, bail on him completely. I mean, it's not just he says he likes to get sort of alternative information out there for people to discuss, but even his own party leaders are unhappy with the stuff that's sort of some of it's from alt-right sites, conspiracy theories, things like that.
Representative Bustos, Herb, has said she will seek a more senior role in House Democratic leadership if she wins, the party wins control of this House. She says she's going to run for assistant Democratic leader. What does that mean?
Well, it would be several positions above where she is now. She's sort of a whip for the Democratic Party and a co-chair of a policy and communications committee and has some good committee assignments. But assistant leader would be in the number four position. You'd have the speaker, if Democrats win, majority leader, majority whip, and then assistant leader. So it's number four in the hierarchy.
Interesting. All right. Well, that is the 17th Congressional District. Again, if you're looking for more information on your congressional district, we know we've got folks listening from all across the state. You can visit ilvotes2018.org. You can also check out all of our election coverage as we have interviewed candidates. We'll continue to interview candidates. Next week, we'll start airing our interviews we've been recording with candidates for treasurer, comptroller, lots of those state positions. But I want to thank Herb Trix from WVIK for giving us a little bit more insight into the 17th district. Thanks, Herb.
You're welcome. Happy to help.
For those of you listening with kids in school, I wonder what the subjects are you're most concerned about their performance in. Is it English? Maybe you have a child who could use a little help with math or chemistry. I'm guessing you did not just shout out loud, gym class. But it turns out that failing a class like PE or art in freshman year of high school could be just as damaging to a student's chance of graduating as those other subjects I mentioned, English, math, and science. That's according to a new study from the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research. Jenny Nagaoka is the study's author and the consortium's deputy director. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the 21st.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks for being here. We've also got Michael Skura on the line with us from Oswego High School, where he's the chair of the Fine Arts Department. He's also the advocacy advisor with the Illinois Art Education Association. And Mark Fulmer is also with us, who's the incoming president of the Illinois Association for Health, PE, Recreation, and Dance. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us as well. I appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Jenny, when we think about what will help students graduate, I do think we tend to think of the heavily academic math or English. What did you learn about these so-called non-core subjects?
Well, the research that we've done at the consortium and other research has found how important the transition to high school is and how a lot of students struggle their freshman year. But I think for the most part, we tend to think of those struggles in academic terms, so kind of the subject that you mentioned, English, algebra, and things like that. And definitely one of our findings was that students' grades go down between 8th and 9th grade in all subject areas. But one of the things that is the most surprising is that they go down the most in PE and art. We also looked at failure rates. And, you know, it turns out that failing art in PE in 8th grade is a really rare event. But once students hit 9th grade, their likelihood of failing arts and PE is the same as it is in other academic subject areas. And the implications for this are huge because failing PE or art is actually as predictive of graduation as failing algebra, English, social studies, biology, any of the other academic subjects.
Wow. So that's a very interesting correlation. Do we know why it is that, I wonder what reasons their research shows why students might fail art or PE?
I mean, in many ways, we don't, I mean, from descriptively, we don't know. I mean, we do know there are things that change in the transition from 8th to 9th grade. Attendance goes way down. This study was done on Chicago Public School students. And on average, a prior study of ours found that freshmen had 21 unexcused absences, which is four times higher than what we saw in eighth grade. So certainly attendance comes into play. You know, we've been spending a lot of time talking to people in PE health and the arts just to try to think about what may be driving this. And I think a lot of times when we've been talking to people, you know, outside of it, people sort of reliving their experiences in high school. And, you know, we're guessing that a lot of this has to do with behavior and also changing expectations between 8th and 9th grade and changing structures for classes. In 8th grade, quite often PE and art are courses that are only once or twice a week, whereas when students get to high school, they are going to these classes every day. Some of the expectations may be different in terms of dressing for PE or having to bring supplies for art classes or bringing your instrument, depending on the art form. So since there's a change in expectations as well.
That's Jenny. Yeah.
The rest of the panel.
Yeah, I was going to. That's Jenny Nagaoka. She's a deputy director of the University of Chicago, a consortium on school research. And to Jenny's point, we have two educators with us. So, Michael, I wanted to ask you, this was a study of Chicago schools, as Jenny was mentioning. But when we're looking at the rest of the state, when we think that students at the highest risk for dropping out of school were also the ones who are most likely to fail art or PE, as a longtime art teacher, did this research surprise you?
No, it doesn't. So what I'm experiencing from the, or my take from the document is that it tells me that this is one of the first things that kids do growing up next to speaking, and it's the visual arts. And so it's just this continued reinforcement that the arts need to be more than just like once a week or twice a week. And it's just something that we just have to support so that when they come into an environment at the ninth grade level where they might have it all day, once a day, they can address those situations where there's a paradigm shift from eighth grade to ninth grade.
Michael, I think people might be listening thinking, how do you fail an art class? I wonder when students fail art class, that must be pretty extreme, right, to get a failing grade in art?
Well, yeah, our teachers would say you have to work at that. So I think what could be happening is there might be a philosophy within the teacher and also trying to work with the student with their visual voice. And so when it does happen, that should be a red flag, and hopefully the art teacher is reaching out to the parents and finding out what's going on, because our experience is most of the time, you know, it's a friendly audience of kids. They really want to be there. So, but the big picture, as you said, is with the state of Illinois, I would say what is happening at the rural and urban and suburban, there's a lot of parallels. I've talked to a lot of colleagues, and they're all up against the same challenges and as well as successes.
Okay, well, I do want to get to that in a minute. But first, Mark, I want to ask you about PE. First of all, if these results surprised you, and also the same question, it seems like it would be also really hard to fail a PE class.
Well, it is troubling with the article, the information that was out there. And I think a lot of times we still have the old-fashioned concept of the only way you can fail PE is if you don't dress and participate. And truthfully, we're getting away from that. And I think that's a good thing. I also believe that, again, going along with the traditional aspect of physical education, it's the team sport. And to be quite honest with you, once you finish up your school years and you're out there in that adult world, it is just a very small percentage of people who still choose to be active that choose team sports. It's primarily individual activity. And so we need to start to address that as physical education teachers, and we need to meet the students where they're at. And that does involve incorporating a lot of activities that the students are interested in, and that doesn't necessarily mean team sports. So I see how we get to that situation where a student fails because the only offering they have is some sort of team sport, and that just may not be their thing. They're not comfortable with that, and so we've got to start to reach out as educators and meet their needs.
And how would that look for PE? And by the way, Mark, I wonder, what is mandated by the state when it comes to physical education?
Right now, it is there are a couple things that are mandated. The first one I want to touch upon is the fitness testing, which is required in grades 5, 7, and 9. And this will be year 3 of that. And I do believe that that's really important. We're a data-driven society, and that information that we get to, that we report to the State Board of Education, that can lead to all sorts of direction and how we drive forward with in a positive direction for physical education. Right now, the mandate is for a certain number of days that per week, and that does go back to individual school districts determining that. Right now there's discussion on minutes, how many minutes we should require. At one point in time, it was daily physical education, but that's been backed off that mandate.
Hmm. And Michael, when we think about art education, what does that look like? Is that also up to the district to determine how widely available art classes are for high school students?
Yeah, that's correct. And so what ISBE, the Illinois State Board of Education, requires is that we offer music, visual arts at the high school level, also at the junior high, and then so many contact hours at the primary level. But then that's the discretion of the district, whether they allow a fine arts graduation requirement or not.
And Michael, you mentioned how different this looks across the state, but how the sort of the common denominator, whether it's an urban, suburban, or rural district, is the ability to afford arts education. Am I correct on that?
No, I would say that most of the time, my experience is that communities really support the arts. It's just that I think what this research does is it really helps them understand how it can help be an indicator of the success of a student and how we should invest in those programs to make sure those kids take advantage of the fact that when a kid does fail, that we can create an environment where the kids won't be and hopefully move forward into a level of success. So, there's so much you can do with little money. It's not necessarily like the resources. It's what the community values, and I've seen communities do a lot of things to make those things work for music and the arts.
We just have about a minute before we have to take a break, Michael, but I wonder if quickly you can give us a sense of what kind of classes you're talking about, what kind of skills or what kind of things kids are practicing in art class. Are we talking about dance, fine arts, media arts?
Yeah, so that's good. That when you're defining fine arts, it's 5 areas. It's media arts, dance, theater, music, both instrumental and vocal, and then also the visual arts. I oversee 3 of those areas, and it's kind of like a differentiating or just different forms of intelligence. As long as a student finds one of those 5 areas, it seems like my experience in the research that I've read that, you know, students really thrive once they find that wheelhouse. And it's not necessarily a career. It's something that makes them
maybe
happy.
Just a way to express themselves, right? We have to take a break. But I'm hoping you guys can stick around and we'll continue this conversation just after the break about some new research about the value of arts in PE. You're listening to The 21st.
Support comes from the Center for Advanced Study, presenting a talk by Michelle Regenvetter from the Department of Psychology. Behavioral Decision Research Meets Supercomputing, Wednesday, October 24th at noon at the Levis Faculty Center. More information is available at cas.illinois.edu.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. Right now, we're talking about a new study just out from the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research. Jenny Nakaoga is the study's author and the consortium's deputy director, and she's with us. Basically, the study looks at high school freshmen, and it turns out that failing a class like PE or art in your freshman year could be just as damaging to a student's chance of graduating as failing English, math, or science. Jenny, as we're talking about this and we're kind of unwrapping and unpacking this a little bit, I wonder, when we think about PE and art, does gender play a role in this discussion as well? Is there a difference between young men and women and their success in these subjects?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a finding that we sort of see consistently across various types of academic outcomes, where young women tend to outperform young men, and in this case, art and PE are no different. So we particularly see a change in performance for Black and Latino young men in PE, and also to a lesser extent in art. So their grades go down by a full grade point between 8th and 9th grade, and this is a lot higher than their female counterparts in the same schools.
I wonder, Mark and Michael, if you can weigh in after as well. When we're thinking about that challenging jump to 8th to 9th grade that Jenny's mentioned a couple times, Mark, how do you think parents and schools can help support students more during that transition, especially when we're talking about PE?
I think if they can begin to model what we're after here, and in the field of physical education, truthfully, what we're trying to do is establish a baseline for students so that when they are finished again with their school years, that they can get out there and move with confidence within any field, any activity that they choose to do. And if they see parents modeling or participating in things, and it could be as simple as a walk to organize activity, then hopefully that can carry over to their future active life. But then that's also a two-way street. And what I mean by that is I've seen success stories with schools that host various family wellness nights where the parents come in and see what the students are doing in their health and physical education classes and introduce their parents to various movement activities. So really it's something that can work both ways.
Right, you want parents involved. Michael, same thing for the arts in terms of modeling, or what other suggestions do parents and schools have to help kids with that tough ninth grade year?
Yeah, so right now what's the trend is things like academic support periods, and the administration will focus mainly on reading, writing, math. And it would be our responsibility as the electives leaders to help them understand that that also should be students should have access to those times to work on their art, to go to the sound booths to practice their instruments, to go to the stage and practice scenes within theater, also going to open studio time during study halls and things like that, and really support when or figuring out how teachers can make those times available instead of maybe giving a lunch duty, giving the teachers time to allow the room to be open for open studio so kids can work on that. Also, because sometimes it is a challenge taking projects, instruments home, things like that.
Right. It sounds, there's a lot in there. Jenny, one last question for you. I just want to ask you, Jenny, one of the goals of your research was to figure out ways to boost achievement when we're talking about urban areas, not just across Chicago, but across the state and the country. What would your recommendations be?
I mean, I think with this, I mean, it's, you know, there are certainly challenges that that the Chicago Public Schools face that other areas might not. But I think a lot of what this research points to is how important it is to be really supporting students across the transition from 8th to 9th grade and into high school. And this really extends to all subject areas. So discussions about help making sure that students are coming to class, that they're feeling comfortable in their classes, teachers are starting to get to know their students, are happening in art and PE as well as all the academic subjects, and really to be thinking about this transition from the student perspective and really thinking about what can be done to make sure that this process works well from the student's perspective in all of their classes and not just the ones where we as adults tend to think that students will be struggling.
Right. Thanks for that. That's Jenny Nagaoka, the Deputy Director of the University of Chicago Consortium on School Research. I want to thank arts teacher Michael Skura, by the way, Illinois Arts Educator of the Year in 2017 with Oswego High School, Mark Fulmer, who's the incoming president of the Illinois Association of Health, PE, Recreation, and Dance, just retired as a middle school PE teacher. All of you, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. On a single night in January 2017, there were more than 10,000 people in Illinois who experienced homelessness. And for people who struggle with homelessness, getting and keeping a stable job can be extremely difficult. But a new partnership between the City of Champaign and the nonprofit See You at Home is helping provide employment for people who are homeless. To learn more about the See You at Work program, I'm joined in studio now by Andy Kornstrom. He's a supervisor for the City of Champaign Township. On the line with me is Rob Dalhouse, who's executive director of See You at Home. Andy, Rob, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Andy, so this was your idea, right? Where did this come from?
It was. So I saw a TED Talk in which the mayor of Albuquerque, New Mexico, was discussing a program in which they started called There's a Better Way. And they partnered with a nonprofit in Albuquerque to provide opportunities for homeless in their community to work and do beautification projects. And so in Albuquerque, they pick up a lot of scrub brush. And the idea made sense to me. And I thought if it works in Albuquerque, it could work in Champaign. But what I needed was a partner agency. And so I reached out to Rob at See You at Home and somebody who works extensively with the homeless in our community. And we discussed it. And that's where it all started.
Rob, what did you think when Andy reached out to you?
The first thought I had was that's a phenomenal idea. Like you mentioned, I mean, it's difficult for our friends to kind of get and keep a job. And so when I first heard about it, I said, yeah, it's a great idea. We had to kind of wait a few months to get the timing right, but then we got the conversations going and figured out who was going to do what, and the patience paid off, and I feel like we've got a good thing going.
How does it work? So what do you all at See You at Home do, Rob?
So one of our main parts of it is we have a place where the folks meet. We have to fill out very minimal tax paperwork for the folks that are actually doing the work. And then we take the folks out onto the street and kind of help oversee the shift work that happens during the four hour shift. And then when we're done, we come back and we have a community drop-in center that then our friends without an address, as we call them, the homeless population, our friends can come and receive the services that are provided at the drop-in center through our social worker, as well as, you know, other housing resources and substance abuse resources, mental health resources. So it's a way to kind of bring everybody back at the end of the day and make sure that we're providing resources if those are needed.
Andy, how much are people paid? So Rob says it's a once a week. It sounds like they've. And how many folks are you employing right now?
So through our pilot program, which we wanted to do a pilot for 1 year to see if it actually worked here, we employ 5 to 7. We've done upwards of 12 per week. We do Wednesday mornings. We go out and we do the beautification projects. They make $10 an hour cash, and they're out there for about 5 hours. And so that's been a very successful number, and that's all we can really handle both financially and logistically at this point.
And what kind of, you said beautification, are people doing cleanup work? I imagine, especially this time of year, there's probably a lot of leaves. And what things are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently we're doing, as I said, beautification. And right now it's litter abatement. That's the primary role we've done. We're reaching out to other agencies. And so in the future, I could see us doing leaf cleanup, snow shoveling, garden planting, various things throughout the community, but again, with the number one goal of beautifying our city.
And Rob, when we're thinking about folks who are homeless, I wonder, I mean, there's obvious obstacles to keeping a job if you do not have a permanent address, but I wonder what other obstacles there might be for people who are homeless to hold a steady job.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, there's so many obstacles. I mean, so many of our friends have had run-ins with the legal system and again, struggle with mental health issues, substance abuse, lack of support, trauma, all those kind of things. And as it relates to, you know, keeping a job, there's other things throughout the day that our friends are trying to focus on, getting to appointments and those kinds of things. So if you're unable to, if you've got too many other things going on in your head and you can't keep it all straight, getting to a job on time and keeping a schedule, it can be very difficult. So that's why I like what we've got going on. Like I said, you know, like Andy said, one day a week right now, hoping to do more, but it's very simple. It's easy to remember. It's at the same, you know, meet at the same place every week. And so I think we've done a good job of keeping it as simple as possible to help our friends succeed in that way.
And what particular group what particular group of people were you hoping to employ? As Andy was mentioning, Rob, you're starting with a pretty concentrated group of anywhere from about a dozen or so, less than a dozen people.
Yeah, one of the group that we're mainly focused on with this program, and really the group we focus on mainly at CU at Home, is what we call the most vulnerable homeless, those folks that are panhandling, living on the street, that don't have that steady income. One visual I like to use is what we call the vulnerability V. And if you can imagine a V, the letter V, and everybody in society falls within that V, either at the top, where you've got somebody with a steady income and paying a mortgage and strong support system, no mental health or substance abuse issues. And then you move your way down to the bottom point, and that's really where we're focused, those folks that do struggle with the mental health and substance abuse issues and no support and no steady income. Those are the people that we're really trying to help, because those are the ones that need those kinds of services the most.
Mm-hmm. Andy, what's been the city's perspective on how this has worked so far for the pilot program?
It's been fantastic. So we wanted the opportunity to not only, as I said, beautify the city, but we wanted to change the stigma on homeless in our community. We want people to be aware that they are here, but we also wanted them to know that they can provide services. And so what we've been able to do, change that stigma, provide dignity for our friends on the streets, And it's changed. The ones that have been involved more regularly, I can tell, have taken responsibility. And so they're not only doing their weekly job with the beautification, but they're coming into our offices and they're working to expand some of the services that they get. And that case management addition to not only the fact that they get to help out in our community, but then we have a captive audience with them and an opportunity to provide case management for them and change some of the things that they're suffering with has really been fantastic. So from our perspective, it's been really successful, and we're excited for the future.
And what does success look like in terms of, you said this was a pilot program, what will it take to make this a permanent one?
Well, we'd like to get some buy-in from the community, and so we just hired a program manager who's going to work to increase the buy-in for other local levels of government, neighborhood groups, downtown business organizations. We need funding, quite frankly, and we want more work that we can do. We want to kind of expand our role. So we're looking at both of those, and partnerships I think are going to be key moving forward, just like we have partnered with CU at Home. We want to increase those partnerships, and everybody likes to be at a table when you have a successful program. So based upon the success we've had for the last 2 months, I'm confident that we'll get more buy-in as we move forward.
Rob, we just have about a minute left, but really quickly, I just wonder what you've been hearing so far from the people who've been involved with this pilot program, the employees.
Sure, yeah. It's been very well received. I talk with our friends each week as they come in to receive their payment, and normally ask them, you know, hey, how's things going? What do you think? And I didn't expect really any negative feedback, and I have not received any of the men and women we have are very grateful for the opportunity. Again, many of them can't get city employment, so they are they're thrilled with the opportunity and just grateful that that folks care enough in our community to make something like this a reality.
That's Rob Delhaus, who's the executive director of See You at Home. I want to thank Andy Kordstrom for being with us as well, supervisor with the City of Champaign Township, talking to us about this new pilot program. Guys, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, we've already gotten to the end of our show today, so we are out of time. But you could always remember our website, 21stshow.org. That's got all the information on past shows, way to contact us. In fact, this segment was suggested by a listener. So you can always email us. Go to our website, 21stshow.org, to do that. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. See you back here tomorrow.